Welcome, everyone, and thanks for being with me this next hour. You are listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks on 1-2 Radio, where we are changing the way we experience life and really challenge our concepts of spirituality. Now, if you're listening live today, it is February 24th, 2020. And I do have a guest today, Susan Dugan, who is A Course in Miracles teacher and the author of multiple articles and books based on forgiveness, and specifically sharing her experiences of living A Course in Miracles. She had suggested that we look at workbook lesson 186, Salvation of the World Depends on Me. Now, of course, those are some pretty heavy words right up top, salvation. But those of you who may have studied the course for some time, or maybe even if you're brand new, you recognize that the course uses very specific definitions for words. So when we hear that salvation, what does salvation really mean? Well, I saw something recently when I was reading something by Ken Wapnick, and it said salvation merely asks that we respond appropriately to what is not real by not perceiving what has not occurred. Now, many of you may recognize that as the acknowledgement that we're living in an illusion. We're living in a dream. We somehow believe that we have separated from other people, that we're separated from God. We feel guilt over that. Now, this is the heavy kind of psychology of it, you know, what the course is based on. But we go about our lives believing something that is really an illusion, believing something that's a dream, acting as if it's true. And salvation is merely the waking up and recognizing that in the same way when we wake up from a nightmare, when we wake up, you know, in the mornings in our beds, we don't start acting out what has happened in our dreams because we recognize that it's not real. So as we look at this particular lesson, Salvation of the World Depends on Me, please open your minds. Listen to what the text is really saying. Listen to the words and the context of what we're talking about here. Now, since I threw that word text in, I feel like I have to kind of go back and correct that. I mean, Mercury is retrograde right now, right? So I want to make sure that we get this right, that we get it correct. The Course in Miracles is actually three separate books. Often they're published together. But there is a textbook that we refer to as the text. But there is also a workbook for students that has 365 lessons, one for every day of the year. So that's what we're actually looking at today. We're looking specifically at Lesson 186, Salvation of the World Depends on Me. Now, the third book in A Course in Miracles is the Manual for Teachers. And I saw something interesting about that one recently, too, because I've always thought the name for that one was just kind of a mistitle, because it would be easy to be introduced to A Course in Miracles and kind of skip over that, saying, hey, I'm not a teacher of a course. What do I need that for? But being a teacher, defined by the course, is the way that we demonstrate in our lives every single moment, every single day, every single week, we are demonstrating what we believe. Therefore, we're teaching other people what we believe about ourselves, about them, and about the world in everything that we say and do. So we're always teachers by that definition. And the Manual for Teachers, Ken was writing about it in something I was reading, and he happened to mention, it's a manual for people who want to teach the course, but it's also a manual for people who want to learn the course, because we teach what we learn, and we learn what we teach. So, not to confuse you, just kind of throwing that out there. But before we get Susan on the phone and listen to what she has to say about Lesson 186, I would like to invite you to join me in our private group over on Facebook. And if that's new to you, maybe you're new to the show, welcome if you are. Thanks for finding us here on 1-2 Radio. But the way you can join us live during our shows is you can go to 1-2radio.com. That's our website. Look on the left side of the page and you'll see the word chat. When you click on that link, it actually redirects you over to Facebook. Now, only if you want to. But if you come on over there, and if you're new, then Scott Weaver, our producer, is going to basically let you in the door. And then you can join that private chat room where people ask questions or they make comments or they just generally, you know, say, hey, I'm here, and throw out something constructive or positive. So if you'd like to join me over in that group, you are welcome to do that. I look for you over there, and I just always appreciate everybody who does come. But it's not necessary, absolutely not necessary. So if you want to do that, do it. And otherwise, let's get Susan on the phone and let's talk about Lesson 186. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar with Susan, she is the author of Extraordinary Ordinary Forgiveness, Forgiveness Offers Everything I Want, and Forgiveness, the Key to Happiness. And she does a weekly study group in Denver, Colorado, as well as speak to a number of groups, not only in Colorado, but also throughout the country. She does some podcasts, although I'm not sure I've got that name right, but I guess you'd call them podcasts. She does some video work and, you know, in collaboration with other people as well, like Bruce Rawls. And if you go to her particular website, which is forays.inforgiveness.com, I will put that in the chat room by the end of the hour. But if you go to her website, you will find different interviews that she's done, you know, things that she has written up after talking to people who are very involved in the course or different students and that sort of thing. So that's one of the websites that you might find really interesting is Susan Dugan's forays.inforgiveness.com. So let's, without any further ado, let's get Susan on and let's talk about this lesson. 186, Salvation of the World Depends on Me. Good morning and welcome, Susan. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, and as usual, thank you for the suggestion of the workbook lesson 186, Salvation of the World Depends on Me. And, of course, I always like to know if there was something in particular that really precipitated your thinking about this lesson. But, you know, it's a great lesson no matter how it came to you.
Well, I think just the world, just what's happening in the world, the greater world, and what's happening, you know, in my own personal world, and just how disturbed we can get by what seems to be happening without any, you know, without our participation. It seems to be happening to us, right? Mm-hmm. And our lack of really the helplessness, I think, that we feel so often in our own personal lives and, you know, as seeming participants in this world, and, you know, seeing so much suffering around us and so much rage and, you know, just difficult problems. So I don't know. It just came to me and I remembered this lesson and I also remembered that it really is very fundamental to really the course's teachings on all levels. So
yes, despite the name, despite
right.
the title, because
right.
this is one of those lessons that I think the minute you take it out of context, which of course we want to, but it just sounds so different than many of the other lessons, or it just sounds so contrary to what I would consider the message of the course. Salvation of the world depends on me.
Right.
You know,
but not
I gotta save the world. I mean, it, you
yes.
know, there again, it's, and yet you get to the very first sentence. Here's the statement that will one day take all arrogance away from every mind.
Right, right.
And that should clue you in right there that this is not going to be what you think it's going to be.
Right, exactly. And I mean, it really is very easy to understand if you've been studying the course for a while and trying to practice it, because the course's spirituality is very, very adamant about telling us that in truth, there is no world.
Right.
And so there is only this dream world that we have, which is an outpicturing of the idea taken seriously that there could be another world apart from God. You know, what would it be like to be separate from God, an individual self among other individual selves? Separate from God. And so, you know, through that, through our the seemingly boundless power of our one child of God's imagination, we seem to have created a whole outpicturing of that, a whole dream world that seems very real to us. We've forgotten that we created it, and now we see ourselves as innocent victims of it most of the time, and we're terrified by it. You know, we're terrified by our creation because we think it's real. And so salvation of the world, you know, cannot be taken at face value, because really the only salvation comes from my awakening to the truth that there, you know, that this terrible world that I've imagined is not what I think it is. So, but the Course does meet us where we think we are in the dream, right? In the dream of a world as bodies that seem to be, you know, having such difficult lives and difficult problems and you know, never seem to feel like we're catching a break, right? Everybody right. feels that way on some level. Everybody's the hero of their part of this dream of separation. And from their perspective, you know, from each of our seeming parts of that, I mean, the Course would say that's all part of the one decision-making mind, that Ken called it the decision-making mind, but the one child of God's mind that seems so horrified, was so split over the belief that guilt was real, that we really did create a different world, that it is constantly trying to defend its seeming separate self by seeing the guilt in someone else, you know, blaming others for experiencing ourselves as victims of in all these incoming attacks that seem to be happening without our control. So our real salvation, from the Course's perspective, comes through the teaching of forgiveness, which is the means by which our mind begins to heal, so that eventually we are awakened from this dream and we find ourselves where we've always been, which is in the one loving heart of God, right? The one loving mind of God. But along the way, that, you know, what the that way that we gently, and you know, it doesn't always feel gently, but right. The steps that we take toward this are through this practice of forgiveness, which is the consistent practice of questioning every time we feel disturbed by anything in the world, right? Every time we feel attacked or guilty or anxious or fearful or judged or judging, or, you know, by all of the seeming emotions that we seem to go through like thousands of times a day, the shifts, the Course talks about that at length too. You know, the constant instability that we experience and the constant hopelessness that we often experience, you know, to just really be paying attention to the content of our mind and our emotions as we go through our day, and make a habit out of questioning the cause of that, reminding ourselves that you know, what I'm attributing that to, you are not the cause of why I'm upset. It really doesn't have anything to do with that. It's a choice that I'm making in my mind for the part of my mind that takes separation seriously and feels terribly guilty over it and is constantly defensive, is constantly trying to rage against others because they're the problem. That they're why I can't be happy, why I can't be peaceful. And the Course is saying, no, that's not the reason. This is a choice, an outside picture of the inner condition of guilt in the mind, and the inner condition, the result of your choice for the inner teacher of which we call the ego of separation, mm-hmm. of you know, guilt, of punishment.
Yes, and I want to read you something that Ken Wapnick says about this lesson. And, of course, most people that listen to this show, they hear me talk about Ken Wapnick. We listen to a lot of Ken Wapnick's stuff. And yes. He wrote a whole series called Journey Through the Workbook. And he takes every individual lesson and talks about it. And, you know, there's just so many wonderful ways, you know, automatically, like, you know, how do I save the world? And why is this my fault? And, you know, why should I start taking responsibility for this being an outward projection of my inner belief system or something like that? But he says very simply, by choosing the Holy Spirit, forgiveness corrects our mistaken identification with the ego.
Right.
And I love that because once again, we get into this forgiveness. Why should I forgive this person? Look at what they've done. I mean, that's what automatically comes to my mind. Or even forgiving myself. Oh my God, I've made such a mess of things. How could I possibly forgive myself? And yet right here, he just says, forgiveness corrects our mistaken identification with the ego.
Right.
And all of a sudden, I mean, I can even feel my body relax a little bit and go, oh yeah, that's the first mistake. The mistake in believing that I could be separate, in believing that there's an ego story that I'm spinning out of control.
Right, right, exactly. And you know, the mistake is reflected in my belief that that I'm forgiving something real.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not.
Right.
Because nothing, forgiveness is never forgiving anything real. We're forgiving the unreal. And so the correction needs to come from a part of our mind that knows that. And that's the Holy Spirit. That's Jesus. That's that correction. We can't make that correction ourselves because we think it is real.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we think it's happening to my body or the body of my loved one or my government or, you know, whatever, wherever we're pointing the finger. But it has nothing to do with that. There is nothing outside the mind.
Right. So, and as you just said, though, as long as we're identifying with the ego, how can we possibly see that?
Right. We can't
see it without help.
Right. And it's arrogant to think that we can take control of it. And this lesson speaks to that. It's arrogant to think that the world's forgiveness, really, and if we are doing it in that fashion of really forgiving something real, I will take the high road and be forgive you what you really did to me, you know, you miserable sinner.
Right.
you know, that all that does is nourish the guilt within. I mean, it doesn't ever let anybody off the hook. It doesn't let them off the hook. They know that they're being called a miserable sinner, even if we're, you know, putting a kind
a pretty face.
In.
Yeah.
And we know that we're lying. Because the guilt never really goes away. We don't feel the release that true forgiveness brings. Because all it does is, you know, again, all we're doing is playing this game of guilt, and it just keeps the guilt going. You know, mm-hmm. It just circulates from one person to the other. It's just this volley that we're constantly doing, and we end up hating ourselves again, which is the synonym for guilt is really self-hatred. We hate ourselves secretly for what we think we did, which was you know, throw God under the bus, right?
Right.
I'm out of here.
Yeah.
But you know, we didn't do it. So, but we didn't. We've forgotten the truth. We don't remember that. All we remember is the guilt, the feeling, the result of believing that separation was real. We forgot why we, you know, thought that. We forgot that we actually thought it. We forgot that it's connected with God, and all we're left with is this constant need to try to portray ourselves as the less guilty one.
Yes. Well, and I like when you brought in the idea, if we really had released it, if we really had changed the identification with the ego, if we had really come to that place of forgiveness, we would experience peace.
That's right.
And in fact, Ken says something, you know, he has an introduction to these particular lessons, and he said, we are reluctant to admit that we've made a mess of our lives and desperately want to believe we've done a great job. If we had, though, our awareness would be of heaven and not the world. And there again, he just cuts right to the chase of, okay, if that were really true, if we had done such a great job with our lives, then we would be at peace. Our thoughts would be
at peace.
Yeah. Our thoughts would be of heaven. So like, let's let go of the charade here. Let's look at the results.
Well, I mean, even people who think, you know, seem ostensibly on the outside to have great lives, are successful, or, you know, as the world views it, right?
Uh-huh.
Are successful, you know, perhaps have the relationship that works in the sense of trading off the responsibilities and trying to complete each other and all of that kind of stuff, you know, I still go around blaming all the time, most of them. I mean, they're not out of the loop, you know, they're not peaceful all the time.
Right.
They just have different targets. you know? It's so, I mean, they may be infuriated by the world all the time, but, you know, it seems, but in their personal life, it's okay, you know? Or, I mean, some people, it's the opposite, right? It's, you know, they're not bothered by the greater world, but their personal world is causing all kinds of strife for them, you know?
Right.
Some people, it's their bodies that, and often we go through just different stages of our lives where one thing, one area is really triggered, right? And then another area is really triggered, and then another. But we feel like we have the rest of it under control, right?
Right.
Magically, even though at various times it hasn't been, you know? So it's true. I mean, if we're not feeling, Ken also used to say that if we're not feeling kindness toward everyone all the time, including ourselves, then we need help.
Right.
You know, and mm-hmm. we're not feeling kind. I mean, if you don't, you really must be in deep denial if you think that you're being kind all the time here. Kind people don't come here, he used to say, you know.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I had told you a few weeks ago, I think when we were talking, there was something that Ken had said that just, man, it just hit me right between the eyes, because he said something to the equivalent of, you know, sooner or later, we will figure out that it doesn't make us happy to make people into our enemies.
Yeah.
And I remember, and in fact, somewhere in one of the lessons, I even think it's right there in the course somewhere where it says, you know, the joy that it feels of recognizing friends instead of enemies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that we just have such a vested interest in creating separation and creating enemies
right.
of people.
But we don't, you know, we're so, it's, I mean, even for those of us that have been practicing this, and that's why it seems to be a journey, a process, even though it could happen, you know, we could become healed all immediately if we just grasped this. But the reason that it seems to be a process is we're deeply attracted to blaming each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're very, the fear that generates this constant projection is so much deeper than we're aware of. You know, we really do believe that we did something horrid. You know, that's just unforgivable. And so we're, you know, we're invested at a level that is so deeply unconscious in trying to experience ourselves as victimized. And so it seems very random, you know, it just seems like it doesn't even seem like we're trying to find enemies. It just seems like the enemies are in hot pursuit.
Right. Right.
Like all the time. Like you wake up in the morning and there they are, you know.
Yeah, what's going to happen today?
Yeah, look what happened today. Or look at the person in your family and what they, you know, what they did in the house while you were sleeping, or, you know, whatever it is, right? Or my email feed, you know. Or even I wake up and, you know, I mean, I'm a very moody person. And I'll wake up and I'll be fine the night before, and I wake up in the morning and I'm in a horrible mood. Why? You know, nothing really happened. But it's just, you know, we're not, again, aware of this deep investment, and we can't really, and we can't get out of it. We can't come to that peace and kindness and self-forgiveness, because it really is, you know, if we're forgiving, if we can't forgive others, we can't forgive ourselves. It's just all of a piece.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but we need help with that. I wanted to read paragraph 2 of this lesson.
Uh-huh.
Because I think it's just so, it's so brilliant in terms of what our role is and how really, how crucial it is, but how very tiny it is compared to what is done for us if we're willing to take that first step, you know. So he says, let us not fight our function. And in the Course, almost always when the word function is used, it means forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
You're in the
and our role in accepting it. That's it. Just accept.
Right. Right. So just let us not fight our function. Just accept it. We did not establish it. Well, that's kind of a slap right to the ego there too, right? Immediately. It's not, this is, I'm giving you this. I am your teacher. Jesus is speaking to us here. And he's saying, you know, you did not establish this. Let me tell you, you have to listen to me and try to shut up for a little bit, you know? He says it very kindly, but, you know, he's being authoritative with us. So let us not fight our function. We did not establish it. It is not our idea. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Your idea was the tiny Matt idea that you took seriously.
Yeah, right.
That was a mistake. Okay? So let's listen to my idea. So then he says, it is not our idea. The means are given us by which it will be perfectly accomplished. And the means, of course, is also referring to forgiveness. And it's going to tell us. All that we are asked to do is to accept our part in genuine humility and not deny with self-deceiving arrogance that we are worthy. What is given us to do, we have the strength to do. This isn't too hard for you to learn, right? Mm-hmm. You've taught yourself something, a whole thought system that isn't real and is so elaborate and complicated and ridiculous. And you learned that with, you know, just in a second. So you're pretty smart. Our minds are suited perfectly to take the part assigned to us by one who knows us well. And, you know, Jesus knows his students. And all of his, and the part assigned to each of us, everyone's special function is forgiveness, is practicing forgiveness in their own portion of the dream, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's all we do, you know? And again, the first step of it is just to say, lesson five, I'm not upset for the reason I think. When we find ourselves reacting, when we find ourselves feeling under attack, when we find ourselves fearful and awake in the middle of the night, or in anxiety and worry about our bodies and worry about other bodies and, you know, worry about the greater world. It's, you know, all of that is really a clue, should be a clue, that we need help, you know, that we need to remind ourselves that we must have chosen wrongly, because we're not upset for the reason we think. Nothing outside us really is taking our peace away. You know, that's a choice. Peace is stable. It's always there. It's within us. It's what we've turned away from.
Right. And you brought up something that's so important, which is, you know, like I said, the whole idea when it starts off this lesson with arrogance. And
right.
Because in so many ways we do, this is too hard. I can't do this. You know,
right.
This is impossible. And yep. I know that
I'm
when
not
I was
strong enough. Yeah.
Yeah. And yet it's, you know, that idea that you've created this incredibly insane and complicated system that you think makes sense. And you keep following it, you know,
it's, right.
No matter how chaotic, no matter how many different mazes or paths you go down,
right.
you seem to have the persistence to do that. And yet one simple thing to just go, oops, this was a mistake. I believed
right.
in the wrong thing. That seems to be beyond you. And just that idea, it's actually quite arrogant to think that this is beyond you.
Right.
Because what all that says, and I think it's kind of in an ironic way, because what it's saying is, oh, wait a minute, Susan, my ego is so big, it's so much bigger than yours,
so powerful.
That I can't learn this. And,
right.
you know, so that in itself is unbelievable, that it's, yeah, I have to build up my ego, my system, my path is so
right.
much more difficult that surely I, you know, it's too difficult
right.
for me.
Right, and we do that all the time. We compete in our suffering and we're constantly...
Yeah. Oh yes,
you know, and we do that internally mostly, you know, with Jesus. I mean, we're not really usually even talking to him, but we're talking to ourselves. You know, we're telling ourselves that we can't get through this, and yet look at our resilience. Like exactly what you're saying. You know, we get up every morning and so we can take another punch. You
yes.
know, and then we go back for more.
Yes. In fact, quite truthfully, this is a little aside, but I was thinking about you a couple of days ago because, of course, here in Denver, it seems to be snowing every other
yeah.
day. So I'm out there with my snow shovel. Well, there was enough snow that I couldn't see where the curb was because, truthfully, I put so much snow into the street.
Right. There was 14 inches or something.
Yeah, I couldn't determine where it was. And so I got most of the walk, you know, put, you know, cleared, but then I stepped and of course, as soon as I stepped, I realized I was really right on the edge of the curb and I was falling. I was falling.
Oh, no.
And I remember you're falling into your, you know, the glass coffee table. And so
yes.
I'm just like, oh no, I'm falling down into the street, you know,
yeah.
And literally I was thinking of you as I did it because I'm like,
oh
how
God.
Does this happen? You know,
yeah.
but fortunately, truthfully, there was so much snow in the street And I had the snow shovel, so I kind of used it and falled right, you know, I just fell right onto
yourself.
It.
Okay. Yeah.
And so, it, you know, of course, at first I'm like, okay, did anybody see that? Can I still get up? But it was snowing still, so I was pretty hidden from view. But anyway, I got back up and I was just fine. But, right. you know, 1 minute you're standing there, you think everything's okay, and the next minute it's not. And that's how life
right.
is in general.
That's right. Yep. Yep. And it, I mean, I remember Ken saying one time that even he was somewhere in his house. He was telling a story years and years ago that he fell, you know, or he tripped on something. But he had the idea as that happened that he was that somebody had pushed him,
no.
you know, and of course that's and he was laughing. I mean, about it, because it's, of course it can't be true. But I remember when I fell years ago on ice. And, you know, I went down, I mean, I broke my hip and
I remember
that. That was like
yes.
that, 12 years ago or something, but it felt like somebody had taken me by the ankles and like smacked me down. I mean, literally that's the way, you know, I looked over my shoulder. I'm just writhing in pain. Like, who did this to me? You know, but that's what our thought system immediately looks for. You know, who did this to me?
Yes.
And that's what we're always on the lookout for. So we really need this. We have to have help from Jesus to correct this, you know. But our job is to introduce, we have to introduce that doubt into our experience, you know, to doubt our reaction. Mm. And if we, you know, to introduce the possibility that maybe I'm wrong about this. Because if we're unwilling to do that, I mean, that is true humility. And it's the true humility that the Course requires.
Yes.
And well, we can't get anywhere if we constantly fight about, you know, I mean, we're not going to go to hell or anything. But we can't, like, constantly defend our projections, you know, because we're just, I mean, this is the opposite. This is about looking at them with a part of our mind that sees them differently.
Yes.
But we've
got
to be willing to look and listen to that part of our mind, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, when you said that, it reminded me. And so I was just flipping pages to find this of, you know, this is Journey Through the Workbook with Ken.
Yes, because, it's so great. I love that series.
Oh, my yeah. God. It really is. And I know I make a god of Ken, you know, which... what can I say? But you know what? He helps me understand it.
He's fantastic.
He said, to say... I am glad to be wrong is the same as saying I am glad to have given up control of my life, including the attempt to control others.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you why I like that so much, because we do often say, you know, we need to become glad that we are wrong. But there is something about, okay, but what exactly does that mean? Okay, I'm wrong. But when he says that, it means I'm glad to have given up control of my life. And mm-hmm. that, oh my gosh, I mean, truly, I went, wow, that's exactly it, you know, and I could almost just feel like, what would it feel like to just kind of hand the reins over
oh,
to somebody
God.
Else?
Wouldn't it be, I mean, it feels like we want that so badly,
yes.
and yet we're so frightened and frustrated when we feel out of control, you know?
Yes, yes.
And so that's exactly actually when we need to give up, you know, when we need the help, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it dawns on us that we can't control this.
Right. Or other people or events.
Or we can't control the world. We're telling ourselves a lie. And that's really a great opening right there, you know. Can I read another paragraph?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Are you going to go to the third one?
I'm going to go to the five.
Okay.
So he says... There is one way and only one to be released from the imprisonment your plan to prove the false is true has brought to you. So the false idea that separation is real and now I'm guilty and I have to defend myself, right?
Mm-hmm.
Accept the plan you did not make instead. So accept my plan of helping you awaken through forgiveness, right? Take the little steps I'm asking you to take. Question the validity of your projections. Of your reactions. That's what we're here to do. Judge not your value to it, to the plan. If God's voice assures you that salvation needs your part and that the whole depends on you, be sure that it is so. The arrogant must cling to words, afraid to go beyond them to experience which might affront their stance. So which might, you know, challenge their reality. You are the humble, I'm sorry, yet are the humble free to hear the voice which tells them what they are and what to do. And that's really just our teacher, Jesus. And all he's ever telling us is the same thing. Forgive and you will, you know, experience peace.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
Peace is there, you know, question your belief. I mean, we made up a God that, and a world, and a God that is, recognizes the world, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of our whole, this whole act of helplessness that we put on too, you know, that we're not aware we're putting on. But, you know, I can't, I mean, it's arrogant in religious terms to say that I can, you know, I have the power to choose a different reality.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
The Christianity looks at that as, oh, that is arrogance and you're going to burn in hell.
Right.
Only God can help you, you
mm-hmm.
know, and rescue you. The God of the Bible recognizes the world, and if we atone for our real sins, will help us. But if we don't, will burn us up to a little crisp, you know?
Yes. Well, in fact, I want to go back and read paragraph 3.
Sure.
And it says, today's idea may seem quite sobering until you see its meaning. All it says is that your Father still remembers you and offers you the perfect trust he holds in who you are, his son. It does not ask that you be different in any way from what you are. What could humility request but this? And what could arrogance deny but this? Today, we will not shrink from our assignment on the specious grounds that modesty is outraged. It is pride that would deny the call for God himself. And see, I do love that because once again, you know, what we're asking you to do is so simple.
Yes.
Compared to what you're trying to do, to be who you are, to just remember who you are and who you've always been, that's all we're asking you to do, to remember
right.
that. But instead, we want to build up this whole other system and go with it.
Right. We want to prove to God that we're, you know, that we're the innocent, the more innocent one, by literally carrying the weight of the world on our shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And blaming everyone else for the burden that's on our shoulders.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing this because of them. I mean, that's the whole idea of sacrifice that the Course talks about.
Yep.
And that we see everywhere in our world, right?
Yep.
You know, and it's just, it's constantly in conflict. It's constantly fractious. It's and fragmenting more, it seems, all the time, you know. And there's more threats. I mean, the threat level in the world is always at the maximum, you know?
Yes. Well, and you know, I don't know if this takes us off course or not, no pun intended, but I have been thinking about this. I have a series of books that are my favorite. And truly, if I had to, you know, that whole idea of, you know, being on the island and, you know, what would you take?
Mm-hmm.
Well, these books were written by Mary Stuart, and they are about Merlin and Arthur.
Mm-hmm.
But specifically, they're written from the perspective of Merlin. And so she wrote 3 books. And then for whatever, but she spent a lot of time, she's English or was
mm-hmm.
English. I mean, I'm sure she's long gone. I mean, she wrote these in the 60s or 70s.
Right.
And she was not that young when she wrote them. I mean, she had been an author and had been writing for a very, very long time. But after she finished the trilogy of Merlin and Arthur, she did decide to write one more, and it's called The Wicked Day. And this is about Mordred, who is, you know, at least according to legend. And, you know, she talks a lot at the end of her books, you know, about her studies and separating legend from what they think really happened and who were real characters and who were people that somehow got added to the story long, you know,
right.
after. But she admits that when she wrote The Wicked Day, which is about Mordred, and then ultimately the death of Arthur and Mordred, she said, you know, by then, all of the things that I had studied, I'd become convinced that most of this was just pretty much made up.
Right.
And that we didn't really, you know, that it was more people's need for drama
yes.
to really see, you know, the Lancelot, Guinevere story and to see the Mordred story.
Right.
And she said, so I so desperately wanted to make him a different character, which mm-hmm. she did. But this is where it comes into A Course in Miracles. But she said, I just couldn't make myself really totally go with that and write the story that, in a sense, I think she wanted to write. you know, redeeming him somewhat. Mm-hmm. And she said, because I had already written the other books. And mm-hmm. in the other books, you know, Merlin was always, you know, with the prophecy that Mordred would be the bane of Arthur's life.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought about that because I then, after I just recently reread them and then reread The Wicked Day, and I thought, I don't think I'll ever read that one again, The Wicked Day.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just such a bummer compared to the other. Well, it is. It's good because she does redeem Mordred in many, many ways. She makes him much more real. In fact, that's why I love her stories, is they're not airy fairy. They're very like how these people could have been real people and what their lives probably were really like.
Right.
And, but she said, but I just couldn't in the end, you know, save Mordred or make him not be part of King Arthur's death.
Right.
And part of me is like, why not? Just mm-hmm. admit you made a mistake, you know?
Right.
And in
right.
the preface of the last book, I mean, why couldn't she have just said, you know, in my studies to this point, I'm convinced that's not who Mordred was, even if he existed. So I'm going to write a completely different story.
Right.
And
right.
I'm not blaming her. I think she's an excellent author. But, you know, how often do we do that in our lives that instead of changing tracks, we go, well, I already did this. I'm already kind of committed to it. Can't stop now. Because, you know, she could have. I mean, she could have written a different book. And so can we.
Right. Right. I mean, we can certainly, you know, in long-term relationships and all of it, we can drop the defensiveness.
Yes.
At any time. We can make that decision. But, you know, we feel so vulnerable that, I mean, often we don't, right?
Right. Or we go back to the pattern that we think is safe.
Right, exactly.
And instead, it's the bane.
Right. And we're clinging to that past hurt and we're clinging to, and, you know, the truth is we don't, on a deep, a part of us really wants to let it go, but a part of us really doesn't want to let it go.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a part of us is, you know, still believes that that will somehow save us.
Yes. Well, you know? And, you know, many places in the Course, it actually says that. That's what you have to finally get is your attachment.
Yes. Is
your attachment to not believing this. Your attachment to the ego and still somehow believing that it's the way to go. Because if you don't ever get in touch with the attachment, you're not likely to let it go.
Right. And honestly, the process itself, if you're really practicing this over time, and it does take time, you know, mm-hmm. this resistance and deep fear that's so unconscious goes much deeper than we think. And so we can't go any faster than our fear will allow. But again, our part is so small. It's just to consistently, to the best of our ability, day in and day out, practice forgiveness, raise to doubt our reactions, you know, the cause of our reactions, be willing to look at them, to bring them to Jesus, Holy Spirit, to ask to look at them differently, to see them more clearly.
Yes.
And we just do that. And the rest of it is not up to us. I mean, we just practice that and then we practice it again and we practice it again. And eventually, you know, the fear begins to, we have experiences in which we really do see differently.
Mm-hmm.
In which we really do, let, you know, drop our defensiveness. And over time with long-term relationships, you really get to experience that. And that's why the Course spends so much time on special relationships, because they're where we are practicing and investing most of our game of guilt. And so that's really where we can experience the most healing. But really, we just do this as consistently with everything as we possibly can. And eventually, you know, that guilt is being undone for us each time we're willing to do that. And as more guilt goes, you know, eventually we're not as afraid to let some of these things go. And there can be real shifts in a relationship in the sense that you do, you know, you can let your defensiveness go. You can mm-hmm. speak kindly, you know, from your heart. You can see that the other person is coming from the same place, frightened place that you are, and you don't have to struggle with compassion. It just is there, you know, suddenly there, you see it. You can see your own role in relationships in that were in conflict without judgment and say, wow, you know, I must have been really deeply in fear there. And, you know, but you're not, it's just, it's welcome. You know, you say, oh, well, I don't have to do that anymore.
Right. Yeah. Well, and as you said, you know, even if it's an instant of peace,
absolutely.
Just, you know, it, and quite frankly, I think we are resistant to learning, but once we taste something that is so much better than what we've had, we're attracted to it.
And absolutely.
And I think that's what happens too. It's all of a sudden, I really could see peace instead of this.
I have.
I've had
the experience, yes.
Right. And so all of a sudden, well, you know what? Maybe this book does know what it's talking about. Maybe Jesus does know what he's talking about.
Right. And we have that growing contrast between our way and when we choose his way. And, you know, the texture of those two experiences is so radically different. And we know that really we want his way. But, right. You know, we're afraid. So we it's the development of trust over time that I can choose this more and more and I'm not going to disappear. I mean, because there's part of us thinks we're just going to go poof because we don't.
On a
level two, we also kind of know that we made this up, you know? Mm-hmm. So, but we don't remember the other part, the good part. So we've got to develop the trust and until it's not threatening, you know? So the Course says, don't be afraid that you're going to be hurled into heaven, right?
Right.
I mean, that's paraphrasing, but it's good that it says that because that is what we're afraid of, you know?
Right.
What happens to me? It makes us feel so disoriented and fearful that it feels like death because it is on some level, ultimately the death of the ego. And that, what does that mean? You know?
Mm-hmm. Well, in fact, Susan, I just found it, the part about being hurled, it said, it comes from the textbook chapter 16. And it says, fear not that you will be abruptly lifted up and hurled into reality.
Into reality, right.
Time is kind, and if you use it on behalf of reality, it will keep gentle pace with you in your transition.
Isn't that lovely?
Yeah. It is lovely, because time is kind. And I mean, that kind of is interesting right there, because so often we go, time is not kind, you know? But time is kind, and if you will use it on the behalf of reality, it will keep gentle pace with you in your transition.
And the way that we use it on behalf of reality is forgiveness. The Course, there's another quote from the Course that says the kind use of time is forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that's what this lesson, salvation of the world depends on me, is really salvation of the world depends on my forgiveness.
Right.
You know, on my willingness to forgive.
Right.
And that will save me, you know, my decision-making mind, from the horror of the world I've created, you know?
Yes. Yes.
Yes, it's true.
How simple could it be?
How simple could it be?
And how difficult at the same time.
Exactly, yeah.
All right, well, I'm looking at the time, and I'm wondering, is there anything else from this lesson that you would like to read before we close out this conversation?
I think that's a good place to stop, really.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, and also, do you have any announcements that you would like to make? Anything you want the audience to know?
Not really. No. Just that the Foundation for A Course in Miracles is doing, again, some wonderful seminars. I just listened to Jeff's recording of the stream seminar that he did in February, which I'm blanking on the title, but it was fabulous. So there's still what, you know, I don't think they have another one until March or maybe even later, but go to their website and check out the streamed offerings there and the teachings. And of course, you know, there's so much information available on their website and the wonderful bookstore. And so,
okay.
I would recommend that.
Yes. And the website that she's talking about is www.facim.org. That's the Foundation for A Course in Miracles.org. And you can find Susan at www.forays.com. And forays is FORAYS, inforgiveness.com. So pretty much forays and forgiveness is all one word. And I always post it right in the chat room. So people, if you want to go over there and check that out, Susan does a number of things, some writings and some interviews with people that I always find interesting. So you want to check out her website too. So anything else?
I think that's it. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Well, Susan, thanks again. always a wonderful conversation. Thank you so much for just, you know, always turning my mind in a certain direction. And almost always it fits in so well with whatever I'm studying in a course, which, you know, which always brings me back to the fact I always say it's so holistic.
Yes, it is.
Because you can pick up almost any place and go, oh, wasn't I reading that in another chapter? Or wasn't I reading that in the manual? Or wasn't that part of the lesson that I was doing? It's very holistic. So we don't need to be afraid of kind of making a mistake with it. We're going to hear what we need to hear. We're going to see what we need to see. And if we really have that open intention of, hey, I really want to see something differently, you know, I could see peace instead of this, then we're going to hear what we need to hear. So thank you so much, though, for the suggestion of this particular workbook lesson. I so appreciate the conversations.
Me too. Thank you.
All right. And everybody, thank you for being here today. Thanks for making A Course in Miracles part of your day and for participating in the chat room and listening to this either live or listening to it some other time by getting it in the on-demand section of 12radio.com. And I hope that you will stay tuned because up next is Kathleen Peterson and Friends. You'll also find me on Tuesdays for my other show, Simple Tales, and you'll find me on 12listen.com. So if you'd like to talk to me individually, we can talk about whatever is on your mind or in your heart. So you can always find me there. So until next week, relax and wear loose clothes. You have been listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks and my guest, Susan Dugan, on 12Radio, where we are changing the way we think about life and spirituality.
Hello, my name is Caroline. I'm an angel intuitive and a health intuitive. And I've been working with people to help them release the issues that are making them ill since 2005. I find that often people are unaware of why they are ill. Since I've been working on 12Listen, I've had clients call and ask me about their health issues, which of course I'm happy to help them with. But if you're interested in removing these blocks, then you're welcome to look at my email-based healing sessions, and this is where the real changes can be made. I'm not a doctor, nor am I qualified to diagnose or discuss your medicines, but I can help to alleviate some of the symptoms by helping your body to recalibrate or realign and work out for itself how to heal. I can work on individuals, on families, on groups of people, on businesses, and on animals. If you're wondering why you are not feeling 100% or you're stuck in a pattern and do not seem to be able to move forward, can I suggest that you take a look at what I'm offering and let's find a way to help you move forward together. Look for Caroline N on 12listen.com and I very much look forward to working with you and helping you to move forward.
Fur baby, animal companion, pet, best friend, little no matter what you call them, you can't imagine life without them. This is Katie Weaver, and I'm an animal communicator over at 12listen.com. Give me a call whenever you're... need a little extra help.